It is important to understand, I always think, who the gospel writers are writing to. What's their purpose? Who is it and what's their purpose? So Mark was a scribe, if you like, a chief editor, perhaps, that wandered around with St. Peter. And most of what Mark has recorded, he would have gained from conversations that Peter had shared in and experienced with Jesus himself. Peter was in Rome, Mark was in Rome, and most scholars agree that this, our oldest gospel, Mark's gospel, was written for the early Christians in Rome. So at that time, the persecution of Christians had begun. I give you that little bit of background because once we understand who Mark is writing to and what is going on, then we start to understand a little more easily why things are placed the way they are in his gospel. And indeed, that's the same for all the gospel writers. So just prior to this event, Jesus has had a very long day. He started teaching to his followers on the western side of the Sea of Galilee. And you might recall, some of you, that he has just given his teaching with five parables. The last two of those was last week. And then we're told he gets into he stays in the boat, and he was taken just as he was. And then he said to the disciples, let's go to the other side. Now, one thing with Mark that is helpful to remember is that Mark, one of his purposes is for his audience to get to know the Jesus that Peter knew. So Mark really puts detail in so that we understand that Jesus, the man, this is about who he is primarily as a man, so that we understand then, as his unfolding of the Son of God becomes clearer, that we enter into that relationship as well. So he's trying to draw us closer to Jesus, of course, as the Son of God, and the instrument that he's using is getting us to identify with the humanness of Jesus. So he uses a lot of detail, and that's why I say I put a bit more emphasis on just as he was, they said. So he didn't go and then get changed into his seagoing outfit or anything like that to sail off. No, he was in the boat. He was on a floating pulpit, if you like, giving those parables that I just mentioned. And then he said, let's go to the other side. When we talk about going to the other side, we're now travelling across the Sea of Galilee to the eastern side, what some of you may know from the news as the Golan Heights. Now, Sea of Galilee is not very big. It is below sea level, but it's only about 30 miles long and about 7 miles across, and you can work that out in modern metric stuff. I don't know what the kilometres are. I should have researched that, but you can nod and work it out. So the other side indicates that he's moving from teaching the Jews to teaching the non-Jews. So he's going across the water. So we have the first, if you like, missionary aspect of this early church. And why do I say the early church? Because the church had well and truly begun when Mark is writing, and he is encouraging those who are being persecuted, the church in Rome, he is encouraging them to go beyond, to go to the other side. And that had already happened because the church had arrived in Rome primarily with Peter. So we have the understanding from the parables what the kingdom of heaven is like. Jesus is trying to whet our appetite. And then he says, now what do we do with this once we understand this? We move beyond. We become missionary. This is what Jesus is trying to instill in the disciples. It's very early days. And that's what the Gospels are trying to instill in us, and particularly with the Gospel of Mark this year, to instill in us to become missionary people. In doing so, like the church in Rome, we will understand that it's not going to be any smooth sailing. One of the first images of the church was not the cross, the crucifix as we know it, not at all. That came much later. One of the first images of the early church was, of course, the simple fish. And then secondly was the boat, the image of the boat. The church has always been seen as in the image of a boat moving beyond, sailing across smooth and sometimes rough seas, moving beyond. And of course, eventually the crucifix came in, that became the masthead of the boat in many symbolic images. So here we are, this ship a sail, as was the first church, starting to move beyond. We examine our own lives, and we can, if we immerse ourselves in the gospel, we can say, gee, the times that I have felt like these disciples, I am with the God that I love, and still I get battered by the storms of life. St. Augustine said that when I'm insulted, that is the winds hitting me, and when I'm angry, that is the waves washing over me, washing into my life. And we must realise that the wind and the waves are part of it, but we do not respond with anger. We respond by, firstly, those beautiful words, quiet now, be calm. And that might be the key for us to regain some of that control back in our life when things are beyond our measure or seem to be beyond our measure at times. Be quiet now, calm. Mark tells us that Jesus rebuked the wind, which means silenced, clamped up, silenced the wind. Rebuked. The only times that that word is used in the New Testament is when Jesus, in this conversation, and when he casts out the demons, casts out evil spirits. He rebukes the spirit, the bad spirit, to draw forward the good spirit. And you're going to hear about that as Mark's gospel unfolds. Because when Jesus gets to the other side with the disciples, his first encounter is a man who has a demonic spirit in him. And then we see that Jesus is putting into practice what he has tried to teach them. Examine our life at this stage and see what part of the ship we're in, perhaps, and how are we handling the journey. We are not stagnant, we are moving. And hopefully we are moving to the other side. That would be a very challenging image for people who have come to Australia, escaping torment in their own countries, people who have come here by sea. They would be able to identify with this gospel very closely, I am sure. I went and looked at the figures of refugees and displaced people at the moment across the world. You might be surprised to know that there are 82, I think it's 0.4 million people displaced at the moment as we sit here this morning. 82.4 million. So over three times the population of Australia. If you want to put that in perspective a little more to help you understand what we mean by displacement and the feeling of what it is, and the understanding of what it is to be a refugee, there are 26 plus million refugees, according to the UNHCR. So more than the population of Australia, just a bit more, are considered refugees. Our whole nation as a refugee nation. Picture that if you can. And the Murugupin family that have been on Christmas Island, a refugee family, just imagine that family at this particular time. Now, they've been given some accommodation as a family together in Perth. They would never have envisaged that when they left the torment of their country to try to find freedom, and admittedly, they did not seek the legal path. But I think when we come to exercising Christian compassion, as we search to the other side, sometimes we have to put the politic aside. That's very hard for some people to do, and I acknowledge that. But because there is, it seems to me, no removing the politic when we talk about refugees. But for a Christian, our heart must come first. That's why the disciples had to awaken Jesus. Mark tells us that he had his head on a cushion. He's the only gospel writer that says that. Gives us that detail so that we can identify being with Jesus and the disciples in a boat. Jesus is tired, he's had a big day at school, and he's asleep, but he's got a cushion. So that's how we would sleep. And then they awaken him. We need, I think, to awaken perhaps the sleeping Jesus in us to let certainly our head, but let our heart connect more with those who are tossed in the stormy seas of life. And in this week, we do focus on refugees. We must be and become a compassionate people. And I think that the tool for doing that is to remove the ignorance and understand what it is to be a refugee. Where do these people come from? Why are they displaced? Why are they wanting to leave their homeland? The biggest number of refugees at the moment all come from Syria. Secondly, followed by Afghanistan. The next seven countries are all in Africa. And then the third portion is, and not in that order of priority there for these people, is the Rohingya from Myanmar. And you look at what's happening in those countries, but it must be a gut-wrenching thing to leave your birthplace and to tear yourself away from everything that you have known just to survive. Very difficult for Australians, I think, to imagine what that experience is like. But if you reread this gospel, you may get a sense, in a prayerful way, you may get a sense of what it is like to be tossed in the storms of life, to be pulled one way or another. The disciples don't say much. Jesus is taking them on a mission. He's not going to let them down. Why would he put them in that position? He's not going to do that. But they don't know that. They're not aware of that. He's not doubting their faith, really. And it's not the issue of faith and doubt. That's not the issue. The issue is of faith and fear. They are fearful. Check what your fears are in your life and see how you can awaken perhaps the sleeping Christ in you to conquer and to cure those fears. To conquer and to cure. And the key to doing that, I think, whether we're talking about refugees or we're talking about our own inner self and how we live out our relationship with Christ, the way that we do that is firstly, be quiet, be still, be calm.